All right, make sure you're in fellowship as we here are dealing with the aspect of this alliance between Abimelech and Abraham. That, while legally, it provides legal protection for Abraham in regards to the well that had been previously confiscated by Abimelech's servants, it's also designed in a deeper level to raise the awareness or teach Abimelech the importance of application in regards to phase two righteousness and with respect to phase two positive volition that he does possess. So the symbolism in this regard points to here God's righteousness and justice as is seen in the seven ewe lambs that Abraham, in verse 28, set aside from the rest of the sheep alone or by themselves. And it looks at, obviously, the number Sheva. The number seven is also the word used for to swear an oath or swore in this respect. Teaching the integrity of God's righteousness and justice as it applies experientially in maintaining and sustaining this alliance under the conditions of which have been proposed and accepted, if you will, by both parties. And that is by God's righteousness and justice, His standards, the God that blesses positive volition as He's blessed Abraham in everything that He does in observance by Abimelech and company. And it points to the fact that contracts, treaties, alliances are only as good as the principles upon which they are written. Obviously, our Constitution, in spite of the end result of this country in the last days, of violating really the norms and principles previously established through the Constitution by the insertion of a very unclean bird, still it shows the power of God's righteousness standards in regards to the existence of a nation as it is persistently, consistently kept us intact and going for the last couple of centuries. In this respect, in spite of all the attacks that have come from the spiritually antinomian liberals and things of this, people of this nature, still we see maintaining for us as a country, at least for believers, Christians, a society of which we can continue to pursue God's plan for our life, essentially unhindered, at least legally, in regards to living the Christian life otherwise. And that states a lot in regards to the power of doctrine as it's implemented in regards to a country. Obviously, as I was kind of harping on, if you will, a little bit earlier, how the lawyers have managed to make complex laws in regards to society and things of this nature. The simpler the law can be made or the contract can be made, the better off one is. Everybody wants to add laws to the Constitution. The Constitution, if it is just left standing alone and using the standards of which the Constitution operates on by the intentions left by us, by our forefathers, you would understand what they mean by separation of church and state. It sure isn't what, you know, is being promoted, etc. It simply states, doesn't state separation of church and state. It says government will not make no law in regards to the church, see. But anyway, enough for that. We'll pay our dues in that respect. So the passage is very enlightening in regards to what one would expect to formulate a brotherhood of alliance with another nation in this respect. And all this is brought out in symbolism in regards to these seven ewe lambs. So 18, where we left off. Now the female lambs, the ewe, called ewe lambs, ewes, symbolically represent Christ's atonement for sin as they were required in the sin offering. As they are considered a clean animal, and they were prescribed in regards to sin offering, which teaches judgment of sins, forgiveness of sins, etc. Compare Leviticus 4:32. But if he brings a lamb as his offering for a sin offering, he shall bring it, the Jew, a female without defect, a ewe. 5:6. So it shall be when he becomes guilty in one of these, that he shall confess that in which he has sinned. And verse 6, he shall also bring his guilt offering to the Lord for his sin. So understand that the rituals, sacrifice, not only highlighted phase 1 realities, it also highlighted phase 2. Right there, he confesses his sin, see. But then they associate it in regards to the sacrifice of the lamb, verse 6, for a sin which he has committed, a female from the flock. Verse 6, Leviticus 5. A lamb or a goat as a sin offering. Either aspect of the animal kingdom that they want to bring. So the priest shall make atonement on his behalf for sin. 14:10 Leviticus. The priest shall then take some of the blood of the guilt offering. The priest shall put it on the lobe of the right ear, the one to be cleansed, and on the thumb of his right foot. Wait a second. 14:10. All right. I got 14:14. Let's try 10. Now on the eighth day, he is to take two male lambs without defect and a yearling ewe lamb without defect. 3/10 of the ephah, fine flour mixed with oil, grain offering, one log of oil, etc. Again, this all with respect to cleansing. Sin offerings, things of this nature in that regards. In Numbers 6:14. And he shall present his offering to the Lord, one male lamb a year old without defect for a burnt offering, and one ewe lamb a year old without defect for a sin offering. One's a burnt offering, male, one's a sin offering. And one lamb without defect for a peace offering. And these teach the different ologies of soteriology, Christology, things of this nature, salvation, work of Christ on the cross, atonement, etc. So the female lambs symbolically here represent Christ's atonement for sin as they were required in the sin offering. 19, the seven ewe lambs thus teach that only through Christ's work on the cross is God's perfect righteousness and justice found. 20 and verse 29 now, Abimelech seeks to know the meaning of Abraham's actions. As he asks, quote, what do these seven ewe lambs mean which you have set by themselves, end quote. 21, verse 29 reveals Abimelech's positive volition to the phase 2 doctrine that is symbolically embedded. Obviously, on the surface, the immediate legal ramifications is in view. But it also, with the underlying spiritual intentions of these verses, points to his positive volition. He's a seeker. See? That goes back and matches with everything else we've been stating about Abimelech, the fear of God factor, and all these other things. And in regards to those who are phase 2 positive, they are highly inquisitive. They want to know what God's Word has to say and what it means. That's why they're willing to sit put themselves, hung themselves under a human communicator with a spiritual gift to communicate and explains these things to them. Just like going through and studying it, and I'm saying, well, what does this mean? What does this seven you laying? Yeah, Abimelech, I'm with you. What does that mean? Dig in, and it will show itself, as God is not stingy when you ask to know. So verse 29 reveals Abimelech's opposition to the phase two doctrine. It is symbolically embedded. And that, obviously, if you will, almost consummates or validates Abraham's previous, I swear by God, my oath to you. He sees this. He's already seen it in regards to Abimelech. Abimelech is now just evidencing that aspect. So 22, verse 30 then, moving on. Verse 30 then teaches the application necessary to be in line with God's righteousness and justice as it pertains here to phase 2. The instructions, you will take these seven ewe lambs from my hand in order that it may be a witness to me that I dug this well. 23, the requirement, take these seven ewe lambs from my hand, illustrates first and foremost the necessity of rebound supplied by means of grace via God's, via Christ's work on the cross, i.e. application 1 John 1:9. Abimelech, the offering to him, it's an offering, it's a gift to him, these seven ewe lambs. Abraham makes a statement that they're mine to give to you. Take them from my hand. Hand represents power. Symbolic. It looks at the symbolism of the work of Christ on the cross as it pertains to this immediate situation. And first and foremost, it recognizes the necessity to apply rebound as necessary in regards to sin. But when it comes to phase two righteousness, that's only part of the equation. It takes not only rebound, but it takes application of Bible doctrine to then fulfill your requirement of phase two righteousness. You can sit there and rebound all day long, and if you don't make any other applications, what good is it doing you? Obviously, the time you can stay in fellowship, you're accumulating some SG3, but otherwise, application, being in fellowship is the primary necessity for us to make application under the umbrella of God's righteousness. So that's point 24. Secondarily, and just as important, is that Abimelech's actions are designed to effectuate a legal witness, or term edah in the Hebrew, to the rights of the well belonging to Abraham. So, on the surface, to accept the ewe lambs from his hand puts Abimelech in a position of being a witness, a testimony. Here, contextually, it's in regards to Abraham's rights to this well, that he dug it, is his, see. Is Abraham's application. And everybody will obviously be rewarded for their own applications. I'll be rewarded for my applications, you'll be rewarded for yours. I don't get rewarded for your application. You're going, thank God for that. I wish I did, I might have a little bit more. But, yeah, that's the way it is. So, symbolically, taking them from his hands represents the necessity of rebound in line with the fact that it makes him a witness in regards to Abraham and the situation. Points to then the necessity of application. So 25, this points to the necessity of application by Abimelech to conform to the integrity of their covenant on a phase two or experiential level. That is, not only a rebound plus application. Again, we're dealing with concepts of righteousness and justice as it applies to phase two. And this is what Abimelech's being schooled in by the prophet Abraham. As Abraham continues to evangelize in ways, obviously, very picturesque, but outside the box, as we are generally just taught it straight up. 26, whereas Abimelech initially held back on any application to the situation, Abraham symbolically teaches him the necessity of works as it applies to his life as a believer. Again, James is replete in an epistle targeting the necessity of application of Bible doctrine in order to perform God's plan for one's life under or along with rebound, confession. Otherwise, one is not manifesting the kind of volition determined to be positive phase two. James 2:17, remembering back when we did that epistle. First, that's the last thing your STA wants to hear. You need to do this. See. James articulates this in terms of one's volition, of one's belief, one's faith. We understand it because of other doctrine, that this is conjoined with the necessity of rebound otherwise in our life. But he is making the argument that if you don't make application, your rebound essentially is worthless. The principle, you know the right thing to do and you don't do it, it's a sin. There's an application you need to make and you don't make it, it's a sin. See? Obviously, given that everything is provided for the application. 2:17, even so, faith, that's active faith towards phase two, Bible doctrine, if it has no works, is dead. That's operational death. Being by itself. Verse 20, he repeats it again. But you are you willing to recognize, you foolish fellow, you spiritual idiot, that faith without works is useless? Really, I mean, what good does it do for us to dedicate our life to maintain a priority, to coming together three times a week on the general average, to learn Bible doctrine if we're not going to make it our life? I say, if it's not what it is, not what it's purported to be and what it claims to be, we're wasting our time. I can just imagine all the hours of schooling, academic schooling that we spent in Bible class. Put that in a professional level somewhere. Where would you be? You'd have more doctors than doctors got. More doctors than doctors got doctors. Or something like that. Anyway, see? I remember one time I was just kind of looking and just see how many academic hours, you know, that in general maybe has been in regards to studying Bible doctrine, whether in Bible class, my own studies, whatever. And there's some 30,000-40,000 hours, man. You go, golly, you think I'd be a genius by now, but I'm still an idiot. I'm still learning. And I still stumble in many ways. But anyway. 24. So application, like I've stated, Christian life is an open book test. But if you don't make the application, then, you know, what are you doing in regards to your test? Sitting around, sitting on your thumb, waiting for God to just dump something in your lap like a sugar daddy? No, that's not going to happen. If He does, you need to be playing the lottery. You're one of those exceptional few. Verse 24, you see that a man is justified by works and not by faith alone, as the examples are given in Abraham, and what we will see in the next chapter with his son Isaac, and also Rahab. And then verse 26, for just as the body without the spirit is dead, phase one, spiritual death, so also faith without works is dead, operational death. So 27, it is our works that witness or evidence our faith. If you capture the picture here in regard to Abraham and Abimelech, the witness is all about application. It's not so much all the doctrine that Abraham is spitting out to Abimelech. Abimelech observes. His positive volition is stimulated because he is putting things together because how God's interceding in his life. So it is in regards to our own Christian life. A lot of the evangelism that we do is often silent and simply through our very actions. And then people find out, you know, well, why do you go to this church so many times a week? Why does your church do this, you know, as things may come out in recourse in regards to finding out information? And their curiosity is piqued. Paul's volition will have that kind of curiosity that can't be stymied. It will grow. See? And before you know it, you know, Paul's volition is in there, and they're saying, well, I need to find out about this. I need to know more. I want to know more. So our works really is our primary witness to those around us, our applications, maintaining our priorities. If you're a person that doesn't make application, then what kind of witness are you in regards to what this church represents, what Bible doctrine represents? If your commitment to NPR sucketh, you know, and you try to tell somebody else how important it is to be in Bible class, what kind of witness is that? Yeah. I mean, it's the doctrine of the blatantly obvious here. So, it's one of the fine perceptions that comes out in regards to this whole evangelizing that occurs in regards to Abraham and Abimelech. It's all in the actions. And then God provides the truth otherwise in whatever increments necessary for Abimelech's population to come to surface, and his population then drives him to figure out these things from the right resources. And obviously, he is definitely locked into the right resource. Abraham, man, I want to be your bro. Nationally. See, basically, that's what he's saying. So, bet you didn't know all that was in here, did you? It is. 28 is Abimelech's responsibility in regards to his right here to the well. See, putting these things together. Okay, how's this fitting now legally in regards to Abraham's conflict on the well? It is Abimelech's responsibility to protect the rights of his allies through application. He made an agreement with him. Well, now he needs to apply to make sure that Abraham's rights are completely and totally protected. Otherwise, what good's the alliance? See? And it shows, it points and it shows a camaraderie that basically a Bible doctrine brings about in regards to believers in support of one another. No matter where one may live, you can just know other positive believers are in support of us as well as we should be of them. As we got to experience briefly, you know, a couple weekends ago, the people are for us. They support us, other believers, some believers that many have not even met before. See. So, you know, application, and obviously application begins usually with prayer in regards to one another, but it extends otherwise. In responsibility of witness to support one another and protect the rights. That's why you have a Living Grace ministry and things of this nature. 29, the teaching of this phase 2 doctrine is embedded here in the form of Abimelech establishing legal protection for Abraham as to his rights to the well for all future posterity. That's where the symbolism is embedded. When you got to look at it this way, when Abimelech agrees to take the 7 ewe lambs from Abraham's hands, it's like him signing a law on behalf of Abraham for the protection of his rights to this well. He is making the application of his by his person as the ultimate authority over this land. See, and his teaching. Application, phase 2, experientially, in camaraderie or brotherhood of believers of the faith. And here, on a national level, it's just kind of mind-blowing to a certain degree, but anyway. 30, the addendum obviously is conditional and hence experiential. Upon Abimelech taking the lands in response, like the Mosaic Law, is conditional. They were having covenant, started off conditional, then it turned unconditional. And this covenant between the two peoples is conditional. And hence emphasizes, again, experiential, why I went phase 2. I mean, I could probably easily absorb phase 1 and a continuation, if you will, of evangelizing that way. But I see it, I believe, Abimelech and Phicol, by the language, when they show up at this feast, they're believers. They're 100% believers now. And again, they come to a recognition and understanding based on observation of those who otherwise proclaim to represent God, or is clear to been made clear that they do represent God. All right, 31. Now in verse 31, point 31, verse 31, Abraham titles the treaty Beersheba, or if you will, the Well of Seven, or the Well of Oaths, however you want to translate it. Therefore, he called the place Beersheba, Beersheba. 32, the title recognizes consummation of the treaty as established based on God's standards of righteousness and justice, phase 1 and phase 2. How much can a name communicate? In a proper context, the name can communicate more information than you can absorb, i.e. Jesus Christ. This name, that handle that Abraham hangs on this particular location of his well that has been confiscated and in question in this regard, he names it Beersheba. The Well of Seven, Well of Oath. In commemoration or consummation, recognition, consummation of this treaty between two allied positive peoples. Based on God's righteousness and justice, phase 1 and phase 2. 33, it reflects the agreement between like-minded positive believers in alliance with one another. on the scale of national brotherhood, on the scale of national brotherhood. God constantly warned Israel and told them, don't marry, intermingle in regards to outside nations. Otherwise, you will fall, your flesh will fall to the weakness of their pagan idolatry and things of this nature. And Abraham is setting precedents for Israel on an occasion where they might embrace another nation in the closest of terms as allies. Not saying that you can't say to another nation, all right, you don't attack me, I won't attack you. Okay. But this is in terms, if you will, fellowship. They're doing this so they can have fellowship, see, with one another. And why are they at the feast? For fellowship. So it reflects agreement between like-minded positive believers and alliance with one another on the scale of national brotherhood. So 34, now with the legalities completed, verse 32a, they made a covenant at Beersheba. With the legalities completed, Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, arose and returned to the land of the Philistines. Now on the surface, it looks like, well, they must have been not in the land of the Philistines. No, that's not what's being said here. And we'll bring that out. 35. Now the grammatical collective singular of the verb arose, cum in the Hebrew, as to Abimelech and Phicol, illustrates the comprehensive unity of government between the allied parties as to both political and military entities, as you would expect in regards to an alliance of such magnitude between peoples, between nations. It includes both political and military arrangements and actions in camaraderie with one another, in alliance with one another. 36, that they returned to the land of the Philistines, Shuv el Eretz Plisheti, teaches that the intent of the contract and addendum was understood by all that Abraham had legal claim not only to the well, but had de facto possession of the region adjacent to it. It goes back to chapter 20, verse 15, where Abimelech gives him by invitation the offer to set up residence and occupy wherever you want on my land. And the returning back to the land of the Philistines is a language of accommodation in this sense that recognizes that Abimelech has basically given Abraham sovereign rights to whatever territory he is now residing in with his cattle, the well, etc. He really appreciates and he has gapped, if you will, what Abraham has been trying to teach him in regards to the seven ewe lambs, and that is the necessity of application towards one another experientially. So 37, it assumes Abimelech gapping the necessity of application now revealed at a high level. Oh, I get it. I need to apply in regards to you experientially and into that which is right and just. I offered you to set up residence here. Now you have the right to sovereignly live here. And it's yours. This is some cool stuff. This is yours. And that just shows you not only the well, but wherever your cattle's going, whatever you claim here, nobody will bother you. You have my protection. You have all the political and military protection I can give you in this regard, as you will return to me if I need you otherwise, and in fellowship with one another. So that's where he's coming from. That's where they're coming from in regards to returning to the land of the Philistines. And whether intended or not, it's almost an anticipation, you know, of Israel settling in the land of Canaan and eventually taking over this land. In other words, he was not only evangelized phase one, Abimelech, but his phase two positive, giving Abraham the doctrinal support to, quote, swear by God, end quote, in verses 23 and 24, in the alliance. I guarantee you, Abraham's not going to swear by God for just any Tom, Dick, and Harry, for some negative unbeliever pagan king. No, Abimelech showed all the characteristics of positivism. Phase one, phase two, the moral aptitude, the ethical aptitude necessary for Abraham to feel comfortable enough to raise your right hand and swear to God, tell the truth, hold truth, you know, whatever. Yeah, we'll make it legal. We'll make it legal. So 39, the summary. In summary here, the Well of Seven, as I will title it. The Well of Seven Treaty sets precedence for future posterity as to Israel aligning themselves with foreign nations as brotherly allies. A, the nations should be on the same page spiritually and morally. In other words, both appeal to biblical norms and principles, both phase one and two. B, they must employ proper ethics, fair play. They are to be employed to handle any grievance, in spite of like-mindedness, as we know, even among population, you will have conflict. And things will occur. Sometimes things out of your control, like Abimelech's servants doing things without his knowledge. See? Which shows the importance of communication. And then C, legal contracts are to be established to protect the rights and property of allied citizens at home and abroad as we're dealing on a national level. So that's the best I can do with that. I'm going to go ahead and let you out of here, and we'll pick up with the final two verses in the commemoration of the treaty, the tree, the tamarisk tree. That's interesting. Tuesday. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to light and see things in Jesus' name. Amen.